This is the March 27 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing. We'll hear him at the end of our program, along with Kurt Kimmel of AgMarket.net and Greg Johnson from TGM. That's Total Grain Marketing. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, anytime you'd like to hear us at WILLAG.org. That's WILLAG.org. Let's start with our conversation between Greg Johnson and Kurt Kimmel. I asked Greg how things had changed in the commodity markets, particularly corn, since the month of January.
From January 11th crop report, it was a very friendly report. The markets went up. Farmers remember their marketing strategy the previous year, which was to hold on to it too long. They made that determination not to hold on to it too long this year. The January 11th crop report gave them that opportunity to get grain sold, and they've done a good job of getting old crop corn sold from mid-January to mid-February on that rally. Farmers are probably 80% sold on old crop corn versus typically maybe two-thirds. Beans, the same way, they're 80-85% sold on old crop beans versus two-thirds normally. So the farmers did a very good job of selling old crop corn and beans on that rally. Combine that with the fact that the funds were big buyers of corn after that January 11th crop report. The funds got as long as 1.8 billion bushels of corn on paper. So that was responsible for a big part of the rally. But then when the Trump tariff talk started, I don't know if that was the cause of it, but it was about that time frame. The funds decided that maybe it was time to lighten up on that long position. And now instead of being long 1.8 billion bushels, they're long only about a half a billion bushels. So they've sold off 1.3 billion bushels of corn on paper. And that has caused the market to drop 60-some cents since that mid-February high. So as a result of that, farmers have been light sellers of old crop corn and beans ever since the market sold off, and they have not gotten very much new crop corn and beans sold either at this point.
Well, let's stay with old crop for just a second, Kirk Kimmel. When you think about those numbers, and oftentimes we will hear the phrases like, well, it's now in strong hands as opposed to weak hands, the commercial hands as opposed to the farmer hands, and the market's probably going to go against them at some point. Without a weather rally, do you think that that's possible?
Well, I'd say 100% of the participants are 100% sure we're going to have a drought this year. So that's been the catalyst to be optimistic longer term. But yeah, there's just a lot of uncertainty in front of us. To go along with that producer selling that Greg mentioned, there's still a lot of that grain to be moved yet. There's logistics issues. Talking of our commercial side, JSA, you take north of the St. Louis, there's still a lock issue there, and there's a tsunami amount of grain when it come down the river. So south of St. Louis, you've been pretty good bids and some pretty good transportation. There's other logistics reasons because a lot of it's been sold, like Greg said. Now it's a matter of moving it and finding the right home. But we're in a situation now where the tariff talk, grain moving, it's going to take some weather. If weather would kick in and the funds would turn back to the buy side, I think we could have some significant up. But it's going to take some weather or some solution to the tariff issue because Mexico is our largest buyer of corn, and that's been the fear. But I think for this current marketing year, new crop year, they're going to go ahead and take it because they need that corn because they're facing a major drought themselves.
It feels like that the weather would have to come sooner rather than later for a real market rally to happen, and it would have to come in the Safrina crop in Brazil. That means really needs to take place in the next 15, maybe 20 days before the dry weather would normally come in anyway. So a lack of rainfall, low rainfall, no rainfall. I'm not sure that that's what's going to happen there. What are we hearing about those 20-day periods?
Well, that was the concern that corn going in late, it'd be subject to that drier weather later on. But as far as the forecast goes, they've been receiving some timing rains, and they're fairly decent shape here. But, you know, the weather can change in a heartbeat. So South American weather starting to go to the background in through here. Argentina's getting some rain there, so that's kind of moving to the background. To get the big catalyst, it's going to have to be U.S. weather. And that's still 60 to 90 days out, because as of right now, if you look what happened, in October, 80% of the Corn Belt was dry. In February, March, 60% was dry or drought concerns. Now only about 20% is. So there's been some spotty rains. You look at that drought monitor, there's still some dark red there that will be an issue if they don't receive some moisture later on the growing season. It kind of feels like we can get the crop in, get it up, but if the weather takes place, it's going to be later on in July. So if you're going to have some replacements or some courage calls on, you might want to have them further out instead of up front here, because it's going to take time to dry things out. Now, if you look at my weather source, it's a clear picture that we're going to be hot and dry, but it's going to be west of the Mississippi. Now, east of the Mississippi, we're going to be hot, but we're going to have some rain.
Well, we'll pay attention to your weather source, and I know you'll tell us about that each and every Monday on the Closing Market Report. I do want to stay with old crop for just a moment. If this is a weather-driven market, or will need to be a weather-driven market, normally they are, by the time we get 60 to 90 days out, so we're talking into May, June, July, normal sorts of time frames, what does that tell you about marketing of old crop, particularly because producers are so far along? Will they be willing at this point just to shut the bin doors and risk what's left to that marketplace?
That seems to be the attitude today. I try to remind people that we've gone up a dollar in the May corn futures from the harvest lows. We were 414 at the low. We went all the way up to 518. So we had a dollar rally. Now we've given back 65 cents of that rally. So I tell farmers, remember this sell-off, because the next time we get another run-up, how did you feel when it went down 65 cents? Not very good. So have offers in place. The goal is to be in the upper half of the range. With this 65 cent sell-off, we're slightly in the bottom half of the range. So I'm not encouraging farmers to sell anything at this point, but keep in mind that if we do get back up in the upper half of that range, it's probably not a bad idea to sell, because a lot of acres are going to get planted. If we don't have that weather scare that everybody seems to be certain that we're going to have, we could have sub $4 corn again this fall. So have your targets in place. I think the goal is to be in the upper half of the price range.
What is the price range for old crop corn? And then we can transition to new as well.
Yep. The low price on May corn was 414. The high is 518. So the average is 466. So that's the midpoint. Today we're at 450. We're 16 cents below the midpoint. So as long as we're below the midpoint with the whole growing season ahead of us, I'm not too worried about making sales. If we get above that midpoint of 466, say we get back to 475, 480, you have to take a strong look at getting some corn sold at those prices.
And basis movement is expected to go in which direction over the next 2 months?
Basis should improve. The farmers sold a lot of grain in January, February. That caused the basis to collapse. So we're still much weaker than what we normally are. But we've seen an 11-cent basis improvement in the last 30 days in the corn market. I think we'll continue to see that kind of basis improvement, 5 to 10 cents a month, which will more than offset the storage and interest. Basis levels will get better. So that'll help the cash price out as well.
So from your opinion then, basis improving, you want to be above the midpoint, have the orders in, and don't pull them.
Don't pull them. No, people, you know, always have that tendency to pull them. And I say, leave them in. And if it keeps going higher, you've got all the new crop corn to sell. But old crop corn, especially when you figure in interest cost, it costs money to hold on to corn. In the good old days, 3, 4, 5 years ago, when interest rates were 1%, there wasn't much of a penalty to hold on to corn into the summer. This year, it has to go up quite a bit to cover the interest cost into the summer.
CIC, cancel if close. But yeah, Greg's dead on there. And what we've done is we've moved a lot, but we've put some replacements on some calls, because when you look forward in here, when you do get some strength, it's going to be weather driven. Hopefully, we'll be a scare. But the problem is, guys look out their back window, and that's the hardest rally to sell. This winter, you couldn't see the actual weather here in the U.S. It's more southern hemisphere. But, you got to have some type of plan, like Greg said, have some orders in, do some call options here, so it gives you some courage. And you want to do these options now because as you get in the growing season, if we do have some weather concerns, volatility is going to go up. You want to buy stuff now instead of a dollar higher.
The range on new crop you said was 430 to 480, so much narrower, not a very wide range. So I'm wondering, on the top end of that range, do producers need to be marketing there too for new crop corn?
We feel so, but the simple thing right now is to do some price floors and leave your side open. We've come in and defended, 450 and 470 in through here. So if the market does go higher, you got the flexibility to make some cash sales when you're comfortable with your bushels.
Yeah, so there is a big difference between old crop and new crop on the average price as well. Producers are going to think about that. Again, remind us of those two averages and then what your expectations for new crop corn might be at this point.
Okay, the harvest low on December futures was 430. We hit 480 at a high, so the average is 455. Today we're at 444. One more number to keep in mind, the February crop insurance average was 470. Most people don't like to sell below the February crop insurance average this early in the year until they're sure they've got a crop. And I guess I'm okay with that too. So 470 might be a good target. We're at 444 today. So we're talking about a 25-cent rally, which sounds like a lot today. But if the funds come back in, if we have any kind of weather problems, if the acres aren't as big as what everybody's estimating, 25 cents isn't a lot to ask for in a corn rally.
Just as a reminder, that's a 470 December futures contract price, so that's where your aim is, minus the basis. When you talk to producers about where they are on their marketing today or the plan in general, are they behind for the new crop sales?
Yeah, they did a great job on old crop, but new crop is struggling. It's like, okay, I'll get rid of the old and I'll wait and see what happens to the new. But Greg pretty well summed it up there. They're probably 10 to maybe 20% priced on that. Now, a lot of them do have some price floors to take the edge off, but physical sales are behind here.
So there are a couple of things that are coming up that will influence the new crop tremendously. And the marketplace is now ready to turn. I'm very positive, given the number of old crop bushels that have been marketed in corn, towards new crop almost entirely. The USDA reports due out Monday at 11 o'clock, both the grain stocks numbers and the prospective plantings report. The prospective plantings acreage number is large, from USDA at 94 million acres, and even bigger from the trade. Not by a lot on average, but there are some trade numbers that are fairly large, including the one from agmarket.net.
Yeah, we're at 95.39 on the corn. It's hefty. The JSA elevator survey, getting some numbers across the Midwest. And two, the team did a lot of meetings this winter, particularly out in Denver, the Commodity Classic, and it's just a huge amount of producers going to be heavier corn. Part of that is due to rotation. We were heavier corn, our beans last year, so we're going to be heavier corn this year. But cotton acres, maybe a million acres there. But two, another thing that can even roll over into the grain stocks report is the Kansas guy out west, this Milo sorghum. There is zero sales on the books. The export market is zero. China just walked away from it. And so those guys could be switching to corn. Now, what you do with that sorghum and Milo out there, I don't know if you can blend it into ethanol, but it could be into feed usage here. So as we move forward here, the true corn feed usage could be a little lower due to competition out there, but we'll see.
That'll put a tag into the demand side of the supply and demand tables. When you think about the grain stocks numbers, and we talked about this a bit during the closing market report on Wednesday of this week, it really is an accounting of the off-farm stocks. And then the feed and residual number or on-farm stocks really is what is more difficult to get a handle on. Shouldn't be very much left, I would think, on the farm still.
No, I think you're right. The average trade guess is going to be 8.1 billion bushels of corn on hand versus last year's 8.35. So a couple hundred million bushels less. That reflects, I think, increased farmer selling, better demand. Mexico is still dry. They've been our biggest buyer of corn. So I think there's some reasons for, you know, better demand, which translates into a lower ending stocks number. And we probably need a lower ending stocks number to offset that higher planted acreage number in corn.
What does JSA use for its soybean acreage figure again this year?
Well, the ag market team's at 82.75. We feel the switch is going to be from beans to corn, so soybean acres are going to be lower. So when you use trend line yield and try to keep that demand up there, that supply-demand balance sheet could be quite a bit tired. Particularly now, if you start whittling away on 1-2 bushels to the acre and try to keep demand the same, it could tighten that ending stocks on beans from 340, 380 million down below 300 down in that 250 million bushel carryout. It's going to hinge on weather.
Does it matter so much given the number of bushels that actually in the United States are exported out of the U.S. that this supply gets, you know, 60, 70, 80, 90 million bushels tighter from one year to the next when it's above 250 million or at that 300 million mark anyway?
If we were talking about corn, yes, because we have to ration out that demand over a 12-month period. With soybeans, no. We only have to ration out that shortage if it turns out to be a shortage for 6 months. And then guess what? Brazil's just going to plant that many more acres, and they'll have the production in the second half of the year. So we want to be cognizant of South America. And so if that acreage number is low, lower than what we expect or lower than what the average trade guess is, we should see a little bit of a rally. But again, we want to take advantage of that rally because South America can come online and we only have to ration this out for 6 months, not 12.
Yeah, when you look forward here a little bit here in this week's trade, soybean oil took off like a bottle rocket. We saw Thursday morning's export sales report, weekly export sales report, continue to show strong bean oil sales. So we're back to crushing for the product here. If bean oil can help the complex, it should. So there's a lot of things to watch here as we move forward.
Any final word from each of you? Kurt Kimmel, I'll start with you.
Well, on this corn acreage, it's going to be high, but you got to remember, if we're going to have a large corn acreage, it's going to be hard to achieve trend line yields because we're going to have a lot of ground that's not quite as productive come in line. So once we get past next Monday here, that's the top line. Now the key for the next marketing year is to figure out what that bottom line is going to be.
And Greg Johnson from TGM Total Grain Marketing, your final word?
There's a lot of uncertainty when it comes to policy. You know, another reason beans rallied this week was because there's some rumors that there's going to be some incentive in the renewable biodiesel segment of the market, which would help soybeans out. Anybody's guess is as good as mine on that. I don't think it's been completely worked out, but I guess my point is with that uncertainty comes opportunities. And we're certainly right now below the midpoint in soybean prices. November beans are probably 10 to 15 cents below the average price that we've seen so far in the last 6 months. But if we get some friendly numbers, whether it's out of the acreage report or out of some policy decisions, we should see a rally in beans, and we probably need to take advantage of that.
That's Greg Johnson. He's with TGM at TotalGrainMarketing.com in Champaign. Kurt Kimmel is with AgMarket.net out of Normal, Illinois. We were also joined by Dave Chatterton for our Commodity Week program. He's with Strategic Farm Marketing. Here's that conversation. Dave Chatterton, why don't you and I begin with some of the policy functions that are happening in Washington, D.C.? Of course, the president imposing a 25% tariff on auto imports that appears to be on parts and autos and all kinds of things, though details are a little sketchy at this point. How does this impact the way the trade is thinking retaliatory tariffs might be put into place?
Yeah, Todd, I mean, I don't see the trade in any way or fashion seeing, you know, the activity that we have as being bullish here. The speed and the scope of which these tariff announcements are coming is really a little bit mind-numbing. And really, really hard to get your hands around in a macro sense in terms of how it specifically affects grain prices and what that means for positioning of large funds or the big commercials in the marketplace. And it creates and heightens that level of uncertainty, I think, that just slows trade volume, drives capital to the sidelines, and you know, people just stand aside here a little bit. And I think we've seen that reflected in our markets here. We've been able to kind of hold on to this $4.50 and $10 level in corn and beans, respectively. But you know, the market feels a little bit heavy, and you know, we're adding in on top of that. Of course, we've got, when you look at policy, we've got the USDA, you know, out, or NAS out with their quarterly stocks and planting intentions next week. But we also got word yesterday, Todd, that the Trump administration has asked biofuel groups to work together with the oil, you know, industry to quote unquote hash out a new deal going forward on the country's biofuel policy. And that follows the clashes that Trump had in his first administration over the RFS. And, you know, there's been a few meetings supposedly that have taken place, not a lot of progress yet. And still, I guess, more uncertainty, 45Z in the policies that we've been kind of dragging forward going back to the Biden administration.
So when you think about that, can those two groups get together and hash something out? And I don't know what that means. Is it references the current legislation, which remains in place? It doesn't sunset, and it gives EPA most of the power at this time. I think there could be all kinds of issues that are pretty thorny, which might be involved, but do we suppose that there is some direction there yet?
I don't think so, Todd. I mean, pretty thorny is probably the nicest way we can say that. I think there are a lot of varying opinions and a lot of different interest groups on all sides of this, from, you know, green diesel people to the oil, to the small refinery and everything in between. And so I guess that's all in play. Supposedly there have been a few meetings that have taken place here. There's been a little bit of common ground. There's been a little bit of disagreement, but really no moving forward with the ball, if you will. And it appears that, you know, the industry is going to seek to raise the RVO for the green diesel in a substantial fashion. And, you know, that would utilize a larger share of capacity, but really no agreement on the 45Z going forward. And I think there's been some talk on the oil side of the complex, from what I understand, of just, you know, scrapping that and going back to what we had, which I don't know if that's a win for agriculture in any sense or form, but I think trying to, you know, predict what's going to happen is really, like I said, it just heightens this level of uncertainty and where are we going to be, and kind of leaves us in the lurch, and things tend to slow down and grind to a little bit of a halt in that type of a situation.
Okay, so once we turn our page next Monday and we'll begin to get more clarification on these policy things in the future, I suppose. But after the USDA reports, I suppose if they come in as the trade expects, what happens in the marketplace?
Well, I think you're on to, you know, what are the tariff announcements going to be on Wednesday of next week, and what do they mean? And then really what the biggest factor is going to be is weather. And of course, you know, we're getting ready. We've got a little bit of bean seed in the ground here in parts of Illinois, you know, but it really, the planting campaign is going to get started here, you know, as we turn the page into April and look at the middle of the month. So certainly weather, planting conditions, and of course, you know, early and good planting weather and warm weather is going to, you know, just feed this narrative of more and more and more corn acres, and, you know, kind of the race to the top in terms of acreage, and the bottom in terms of, I guess, price projections that go along with that.
What are you advising producers to do with old crop at this time? Many had thought that the marketplace was beginning to feel more bullish to corn. I don't know that that's what you're telling me will be the case.
Well, yeah, you could certainly make an argument that corn can be bullish here. I mean, if you look at the stock situation, particularly among the world's exporters of corn, it doesn't take much of a problem to, you know, a 3 or 5% yield decline in Brazil or in the U.S. here this summer creates a tight situation. But right now, with the demand kind of the unknown of the whole thing and trade policy hanging out there, I think you have to be defensive, Todd. And we're a seller of rallies here. And, you know, this new crop number has been kind of able to hang around in these futures, or these 25 futures around that 450 level. We've slipped below that as we're talking today. But, you know, I think we have to look out there with some idea of, you know, unfortunately, these aren't the prices that we had, you know, 2 and 3 and 4 years ago. But you have to play a little bit of defense here. And, you know, we just don't know what's going to happen. I think the assumption here is that if we get anywhere near this 95 or 96 million acre number that's being whispered in the trade, and we have normal weather, normal yields, that we're going to see lower prices this fall. And, you know, we can't account for a 2012 type of a situation that can certainly be in play. But, you know, it's a tough bet in terms of marketing. So I think you have to be a disciplined seller here, keep your offers in front of the market, and be willing to accept some small wins here.
So producers, when they look at this, they hear you say, well, December corn at 450, that gives me something in the 410, 420 range for cash, probably.
Mm-hmm.
They're not likely going to be very happy about that.
No, they're not. And I'm not happy about it either, but we are where we are. And that doesn't mean we can't see a $5, you know, type of a handle this summer in terms of the futures market. I think the idea is to have a plan and to have some offers out there ahead of those markets so that when we get there, Todd, there's not the question of, hey, you know, oh, are we going to rally more? And hey, we've got a crop scare and I never want to, you know, I'm not going to have a crop. And, you know, we go through that psychological process, I guess, or, you know, almost yearly with producers where, look, you know, we almost always do have a crop. You've got crop insurance to back up these sales. You need to be, you know, taking profit when you can see it. So I think the idea here is just have that plan and have enough discipline to be willing to accept those levels. It's a tough argument to make a case for December corn much above that $5 mark without a severe weather event here in the U.S. this summer. And we're watching what's happening in Brazil with their safrinha crop, but so far so good in that regard.
How should producers leverage the crop insurance to think about these early season sales at much discounted prices to that $5 December number?
Yeah, I mean, a great safety net. We saw a number of producers step up their coverage levels through ECO or through different types of products and strategies that put them in a little bit better position. And, you know, we need to keep that in mind. That should give you some confidence to go ahead and make those sales at least up to your APH or close to that level as you go through the process here. I'm not saying, hey, sell everything if we hit 450, but, you know, continue to nibble at that if we get the opportunity and be ready for those summer, you know, potential weather scares if and when they develop here.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may hear the whole of the program anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willhe.org. We were joined by Dave Chatterton of Strategic Farm Marketing, along with Kurt Kimmel from agmarket.net, and Greg Johnson of Total Grain Marketing. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.